Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 204 of the show. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gargi-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And man, I lead off with the usual and say it's busy, but you don't need me to tell you that twice. Just so many games going on. Get a little cup soccer, Magic of the Cup. You got true cup match out in Quebec, by the way, which was absolutely phenomenal. We can definitely touch on at some point, but busy weekend. You need us to tell us that. I mean, this weekend I tucked into four League One BC matches, an MLS match. There's obviously some CPL, so just myself, busy. But Sam, on your end, before we dive into all that we have to chat about, from Whitecaps to CanChamp to League One to everything, how's it going this week amid all the chaos? May, I don't know, we need to forget March Madness right now. It's May Madness in Canadian soccer.
Exactly, and things are heating up here on the ground, not only in terms of the temperature, it looks like it's going to be borderline summer conditions this weekend, but things are heating up on the football pitch as well. As you said, so many leagues, so many competitions, all in full flight now, which is fantastic, but it also makes those weekends a little bit hectic. I mean, it's not just the weekends, it's midweek now too, so it's coming at you fast, and yeah, you have to do everything you can to stay on top of it. Hopefully, that's part of the reason why you're here on the show, is to help stay on top of everything, right? We're going to kind of go around the horn from Vancouver Whitecaps. They've had two matches since we last chatted on this podcast. A ton of Canadian Championship matchups. League One BC, Canadian Premier League stuff ongoing as well. And then obviously looking ahead to the Vancouver Whitecaps this weekend and beyond. And the same thing with all those leagues. So we're going to do our best here on a Thursday recording to get you through what happened in the week that's gone by, and also kind of tee things up for the weekend ahead. So as always, Alex, very much looking forward to getting into it.
Yeah, it's quite outrageous. I don't think there's a break in May. It's literally weekend, midweek, weekend, midweek. Either there's always a CanChamp, there's two MLS midweek windows. I even know League One BC, there's some Wednesday matches in there. So it is quite something. So we'll try our best to roll through this as efficiently as possible. Would have loved, of course, to record this earlier. But again, that's the thing with midweek matches. Here ourselves, we're going to have to play a bit of a balancing game of, do you go before the midweek matches or do you go after? And this week we decided to go after. And, you know, I'm glad we did, because ultimately, we'll lead off with the Whitecaps. And the more interesting match, let's just say, ended up happening in midweek. I think the weekend was a, you know, okay match for the Whitecaps. I think you can ultimately settle with a 0-0 draw with Austin. They didn't lose, so that's not, you know, that's not terrible. But they also didn't win, which is maybe less so for a team that has top of the table ambitions. But at the end of the day, they did pretty much everything they could and they avoided any mistakes. Most nights you do that, you win games, so you can't fault the process. Then of course, midweek, the Whitecaps went to Cavalry, leg one, quarterfinals, got a very crucial away road win while rotating the squad. We'll break that one down a bit more in depth. So let's just start with Austin, 0-0 at home, big crowd, by the way, great crowd. But unfortunately, they didn't really get much to cheer about. There was a goal. Ultimately, it was chalked away. And then there was a penalty shout that Sarita reports. Shout out to Sarita Patel as usual. She threw a bit of fuel on the fire after the game, posting an excellent angle. And I'm sure VAR would love to use to call the penalty. At the end of the day, it was an Alex Ring on Fafapiku in the first half. The Whitecaps huffed and puffed. But for those who listen to our preview, you might not have been surprised by what we said about Austin. They like to defend. Recently, Brad Stuver is a good goalie. Those two things manifested itself. The Whitecaps huffed, puffed, couldn't blow the house down like they do in the Little Piggies. And 0-0 draw ends up being the result.
It was a little bit like the Whitecaps of 2023, wasn't it? Where loads of chances, loads of positive football, but maybe not the final result that reflected that positive play. That's certainly how it felt to me. Just to pick up on something you said right off the top, the atmosphere, not just the amount of people at BC Place, but the noise they made, the excitement throughout the match, even though it was a nil-nil. I mean, we never got that goal reaction. I guess we got it for Ryan Gauld on the goal that was struck off, although it was pretty brief because the flag went up reasonably quickly there to kind of alert that hey, there might be something going on. And then obviously VAR takes a look at it and they call it back. But I just thought that being there in the buildings, the vibe in the stadium was tremendous, and I really look forward to more of that. Obviously, Miami on the 25th is going to be insane for a lot of reasons, and shout out to Miami for blowing the doors off New York Red Bulls this past weekend. That was certainly something. But yeah, I think in terms of the match itself, frustrating for the Caps, but also nice to see them play comfortably with possession and be able to, put in a dominating performance, even if it wasn't reflected on the scoreline. I think that's nice to see that they have that in the locker because they've been content to play without the ball, to hit in the counter. But as we've talked about, Alex, beating that low block remains a bit of a bogey for the Whitecaps. There was nothing more clear about the Whitecaps' weakness as a team this year than when Seattle sat back at home, right? That was the game plan for a desperate Sounders team at home. Tells you everything you need to know about what other teams think of the Whitecaps and what their potential weakness is. It's okay if we sit back and structure, can you really beat us? Especially if you have a goalkeeper like Brad Stuver back there who's doing a tremendous job. So, that's something the Whitecaps will have to look at and try to figure out. But I will say, like, the chances throughout the match were there. Not only the goal that was called back, not only the Fafa Pico penalty shout, obviously the two biggest moments, but also, Ryan Gauld near the edge of the box on his left foot going for that top left-hand corner. I felt like in that moment as he lined it up, I could have turned away and it's just like, yep, that's going in the back of the net. And I think Ryan Gauld thought the same. It just grazed the outside edge of the netting. And he was just a bobble or two of the ball away from that just being a perfect upper 90 strike. So, don't want to be that guy that says, oh, they had so many chances, they were very close, and we could be speaking about this match differently, but there is a lot of truth to that. Now, talking about the decisions themselves, I think that I expressed this in the stadium, and I guess I feel overall the same way now, where my frustration doesn't even lie with, oh, that wasn't a handball, or oh, that was a foul, both being legitimate potential arguments. My frustration is more with like the VAR review process and the fact that basically over scrutinizing and over analyzing led to calling a handball in the first instance. Yet scrutinizing and analyzing in the second instance didn't lead to overturning. And it seemed to me like the threshold for what you needed to see to overturn those calls was the same. It was difficult to see live whether Fafa Pico had handled it. It's still a bit difficult on the replays. Did it graze his stomach before it hit his arm? Where did it hit him in the arm? I don't have like a definitive answer to any of those questions. But okay, the ref in this instance said, yeah, there was enough there to go with a handball. If that's true, I don't know how there isn't enough contact for it to be a foul against Ring on Pico. So I think I would have been totally fine if they'd allowed the goal to stand and called off the penalty, or if they'd called the handball but then called the penalty. Like any other option would have seemed like consistent officiating and use of the VAR. But the fact that they use the same review process very differently in two instances in the same match is what frustrates me more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'll pick up on the officiating just because may as well, talk about it at the start before we kind of talk about the rest of the match. Because yeah, definitely, it's a strange match, but Is it just me? I don't know. Again, this is where I'd throw it to you, Sam, as well. Like, because maybe this is just anecdotal. Maybe this is just more from the Whitecaps perspective. It feels like the threshold for VARs, like, not the same it was a year or two ago. Because, like, before, I've always been very complimentary of MLS VAR because I feel like they've always seemed to find a good balance. You know, they use the term clear and obvious, and for the most part, like, it was almost the threshold usually made a lot of sense. It was kind of like, all right, that's a call. Go to the monitor. But I don't know if this is just, I think it's definitely weighted from the Whitecaps perspective because it definitely feels like it's happened to a lot of Whitecaps decisions. But it just feels like the threshold for they're leaning way more into the clear and obvious, and it's like very heavily on the on the field component of it, because the way I see it, it's like, yeah, clear and obvious, if you think about it, is a very funny concept, because if it was clear and obvious, in theory, it would be called right away and there would be no use of VAR. So, like, what is clear and obvious? And that's where the second call really came up short. First call, fine. Did the Whitecaps get let down by horrific camera angles? Possibly. You know, Fafapico is gonna claim it's his thigh. It's in his best interest for him to claim that it's his thigh. But in reality, we don't know. It's hard to tell. It hit his arm. That we do know. But as some may know, some may not know, they changed the handball rules as they do every year because no one likes them. Or at least no one can agree on them. And now, if unless the ball, you deliberately use the ball, you can score after. As long as you deliberately handle the ball, or the ball hits your hand and goes in the net. If it hits your chest and then your hand, because that's not deliberate, or if your hand is near your side, right, the unnatural position, it can count. And but you know, in terms of Pico, you're just let down by the camera angles. Fine, that was whatever, move on. The penalty one makes zero sense, because the fact that in live time Pico wasn't on the ball, he was trying to eat well, he was on the ball, but I mean, he took a touch, the ball was away from him, ring went right through Pico even though he was nowhere near the ball. He kind of gets taken out. Then they go to the review. At that point, if they didn't review it, fine. You can argue, oh, whatever, missed call. At least you would have been like, all right, they felt the threshold wasn't, you know, clear and obvious, quote unquote. But the fact they went to the re review, looked at it, and then didn't see contact, that really surprised me, because I feel like a year or two ago that would have been a call. But I don't know. Maybe that's something where it's just because, again, from the Whitecaps perspective, there isn't really a whole lot that ever happens in terms of VAR. Like, there haven't been many penalties this year for the Whitecaps. There haven't been many red cards other than the Seattle red card wedding, I guess, because they love that term down there. Like, there isn't that many calls. So maybe that's why that the few VAR instances there's been, like, it feels like the threshold's slightly been different in this game. That kind of seemed to manifest itself, unless I'm seeing things.
I mean, for me, I think the only thing that's been consistent about the threshold for overturning calls is that it's been inconsistent. It's been a moving target. I don't know what constitutes clear and obvious. I don't know, what constitutes the threshold for the VAR official to actually call the guy over to the board. Like, I feel it's one of those things where, I guess, in my estimation, or if I was, if I was in charge of the pro referees all of a sudden, I would only want my official being called to the board, called to, go look at the monitor if like he's gonna look at the screen and pretty much immediately go, yep, I got the call wrong. Okay, overturn. I think if you're getting called over to the video board because it's we're not sure, then just go with the call on the pitch and don't worry about it. So I don't understand, like on the second one, for example. There's no foul on the pitch, right? And then there's a VAR. He goes over to the board. If he's being called to go look at it on the monitor, that means that there was an error. And short of the referee on the pitch really seeing something that everyone else doesn't and being defiant, I think those moments should be few and far between. But it seems like it's more like, oh, I've been advised to go have another look, and then I'll just kind of do whatever I want and make a decision. And I'm not sure I really understand that, but and that's possibly not the way. I'm sure that's not the way they're breaking things down or explaining it in those, pro referee meetings, but that's how it feels like at times that yeah, the serious I would like the threshold, I guess, to go look at the monitor. to be a little bit higher and for it to be used less often, but to maybe be used more decisively when it is called up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's tough, right? Because, it's ultimately from a ref of VAR's perspective, you calling in someone to see it. Maybe if they didn't see a foul in the first place on the field, they might not, see it, there's just so many factors that can go into it. And that's what's an interesting aspect of VAR is the fact that they recommend, right? Because ultimately it's the discretion of the on-field official. Which I think is good, right? Give the power to the official, you give them more replays. I'm always in favor for it. You see it a lot more in the NBA now, although NBA officiating is always a hot topic. But hey, they have the power to see the monitor, look at what's going on, make the call. You see it now in hockey too. And and that's the same with VAR. I'm not mentioning anything of the sorts, but then yeah, I guess it kind of becomes the line of at what point does the VAR start playing a role of, all right, if they see something, if it helps come to the ultimately the right decision, something to watch. But yeah, I don't know. It's again, this one wasn't the first one. I thought that was, fine. They had a look, didn't like what they saw. But yeah, the second one, I was very surprised for them just because it felt like super clumsy, super not reckless, but definitely clumsy from Alex Ring. And it could have very well been a penalty. It isn't at the end of the day. Not much the Whitecaps can do about it. And look, they'll move on. That's the way it goes sometimes. I guess we didn't really hear much of an explanation on what occurred. I'm sure, we'll hear more as time goes on. But as for the game itself, enough of trying to dissect and comprehend VAR. It almost makes my head spin sometimes trying to dissect the nature of all that, and especially everything after all the controversy this week in Champions League. I learned a lot from that whole situation with Real and Bayern, but that's a whole other story for a whole other day. Returning to the match itself, yes, that I guess that VAR, section kind of sums up how the night went for the Whitecaps. Because man, first of all, this is just like kind of as an aside, not getting into the nitty-gritty of the game, but man, you must. If you're a Whitecaps fan perspective, you must feel like the team is cursed because, like, big crowd feels like every time the spotlight's on them, something strange happens, right? Like, it's Tim Ford deciding to set a pick on Alessandro Schopp for, it's just you get snake bitten and everyone forgets to score. Like, it just feels like the team is cursed. But on a more serious note, that's what I'm very curious to see how Vanni Sartini kind of analyzes and adjusts from this game, because it's one where you can genuinely sit there and be like, we played fine, we grow from this, we're good, right? I could very well understand that perspective. But then also, like you mentioned, this low block thing has been a problem for a while now. And I think it's something I've been at least trying to kind of banging the drums about on in some of our articles, or at least in post game reports, been like, this is something that continues to crop up. Like you mentioned, Seattle is a perfect example. Although I must say, Vanni Sartini finally kind of gave me an idea of what they might need to do to fix it after the game. So I thought that was interesting, just for those curious, and I can throw it to Sam after to hear his thoughts. But I asked Vanni Sartini about the low block, if there was anything he kind of felt the team could adjust. And what I thought was interesting is he said the team needs more near post movement. They feel that often on low blocks, they try to cross it, which is fair. Brian White's a good target in the box. It actually is not an unreasonable strategy. Like, Ryan Raposo is a good crosser. He had what, like three crosses that nearly ended up as goals in this game, but he felt that didn't have enough near post movement. And when I sat back and reflected, I thought that was a very interesting point. Because I think it sums up the biggest problem with the Whitecaps low block. Because in theory, it makes zero sense. Ryan Gauld, number 10, who can break down low blocks, he has that killer final pass. Boom, that's the sort of guy you want, the lock pick, right? They have guys who can cross the ball. Sam Adekugbe, Fafapiko, Ryan Raposo. Okay, that's not an issue. You need that. Brian White, the perfect battering ram, right? The guy who scored, what, 9, 10 headed goals last year. You theoretically would want that against the low block, right? And the Whitecaps have good combination play. So it's not like it's something where they're unfamiliar of having to play in tight spaces. Yet when it all comes together, it doesn't work. And I think Sartini's point was very important, because what I came to realize and kind of summed up how I felt is that it just seems like the Whitecaps the way they're, I think it's partly why the way they're set up defensively, their goal is to what? Limit space in their zone and then counter in numbers. And there, the way they play, the opportunities kind of set themselves up, right? Like you defend super well, it creates these 4v2s, these 4v3s. They're talented. They know how to turn those into goals. When it's a low block, when it's, 10 outfielders versus 10 defensive players and a goalie, I think the Whitecaps kind of expect things to happen for them, and they're not willing to, right now, to do some of go the extra moment or make a little sacrifice to create a goal, if that makes sense. Like, for example, if there's a shot, they're just kind of shooting and trying to hoping it score. They're not looking like, oh, maybe I should shoot low for a rebound. Maybe I should do this. Or it's like Vanny mentioned, they're not making near post runs. So they're like, okay, I'm not going to get the ball if I run near post, but maybe I take a defender with me and that opens up space. They're not doing a lot of those little things to break down the low block. And I think that's what's hurting them, is because they expect that, oh, we have the quality, we have all the pieces, the low block's going to break down itself. When in reality, sometimes you need to go the extra mile. And I thought that was, Vanny's comments were very interesting. So Sam, I don't know if you quite picked up where I'm going with that and what you think, but I don't know. I feel like that's kind of the first theory I've seen where it's like, okay, that might help explain where the Whitecaps have kind of struggled with low blocks.
Yeah, I think what Vanny made sense. I think what you said makes sense. And this would be my thought, is that, as you mentioned, because the Whitecaps have been so good hitting in those transition moments where, the opportunities, just there's a space to run into and the Whitecaps run into it, right? They take it, what's there to be had. The thing is, when you're playing against a low block, that's the whole idea, is there's nothing there to be had. You have to go create it for yourself. And I think in that sense, it's just more something where you have to mix up your attacking patterns. There has to be like wide variety. And I think often the Whitecaps get a little too much into one thing at a given time. So at the end of last season, it was the get it to Brian White and those hold up moments, then look for Gaul, then White would try to run off the shoulder, and like, okay, teams keyed onto that and they started to shut it down. Even this season, it's like, okay, they want to find Pico or Ahmed in a wide area and kind of let those guys cook and then try to build off of that. Okay, well, same thing. Teams start to key onto it. They start to do things tactically to cut out those moments or to just be in the right structure. Which is why I think we saw, so shout out to Sam. Hope he's recovering well, because that was a storyline from the match, that Sam Adekubi, pulling up with injury. But something that Sam provided in his brief cameos was like a different profile. He was able to play cutbacks, find those runners at the near post or kind of those late entrants to the box. I thought that's something that Alessandro Schopf and Pedro Vite are both good at, and I would like to see more of, is those late in the phase box entries where you can find that final runner. There's just all kinds of extra things that the Whitecaps can try to do to just vary their attack, so that, it's one thing to have a low block, but it's another thing to have a low block where you can anticipate how the other team is going to attack that low block. Then it becomes incredibly difficult to create anything, right? So I think it's just about varying that attack, and making near post runs, doing, even just having, I think at times, something that the Whitecaps could certainly look for in the summer if they're looking for that third attacker is someone like Pico, who takes on players 1v1 more often. Because Ahmed does that, but Ahmed looks to pass off of it. Pico can do it and look to shoot, but I would say at this stage that's not really his bread and butter. If they could find someone that's like a true 1v1 threat to take someone on and to go have a shot and score, I think that's something as well that the Whitecaps don't have at the moment. And when you're playing against structure, that would certainly be a valuable tool in the arsenal.
Yeah, I definitely think that's it, unpredictability. And I think there's different ways to look at it, because I've also thought about different profiles around the league that I would look to emulate. And there's a few, because I think with Brian White, when you look at him, what he brings, it's strong positioning. He just gets in good areas, he gets XG. We know about his finishing, that sometimes when it's one touch, he seems to like it more than it's two, when it's two, three, four, five, and you're thinking about what you're doing. But if you're gonna, for example, if Brian White's gonna be your target, you need ways to open up those looks, because if he's, and that's the thing with Brian White, which is fascinating. He's predictable, but he's so good at his positioning that he, the people, he hasn't really, like, he's not someone who's creating any complex looks, but he's a guy who consistently gets breakaways, those cutbacks, those headers through his positioning. Well, if you're going to open up that so that teams don't hone in on him, I think there's a few ways you can go. Either you can go like a Cucho Hernandez type. Of course, that's like one of the best, if not the best nine in the league. So I'm not saying something similar, but one thing that I find fascinating with him at Columbus, this guy shoots as much as he wants. And I think it's funny, I throw Evander into this similar mode, like the Evander Cucho of just like head down and, batter the ball from distance. I think that could be, something interesting. So that's something we've mentioned about the Whitecaps. They don't really have anyone who can hammer it from distance. And part of it's also stylistic. They want high quality looks. They sacrifice shots for higher XG moments. That's part of the system. But I think it wouldn't hurt to have a hammer, right? Like someone who forces defenses to step up, forces defenses to recognize their threat. Why? That opens up more space for the balls to go out wide, to go in behind, to cross. That's the secret of Cucho Hernandez. He's so good that you leave him, he'll score. If you mark him tightly, oh, they've got Diego Rossi who can get in behind and hurt you. They've got Jason Russell Rowe who can hurt you. They've got other guys who can hurt you. So that's one way of thinking, like a long-range mercenary in the Evander Cucho mold. If not, Diego Rossi is another example. That's kind of like Rossi is kind of like Fafa Pico, but younger and, a world or top class talent, someone who can dribble, someone who can provoke in that way. That's kind of, like you mentioned, Sam, that's another option I like. Someone who Rossi will demand the ball and take guys on, but he's good at it. He draws defenders in and he's a good playmaker. He opens up space for others. That's really been impressed me about Columbus. So you emulate Columbus. Or the third school of thought is you kind of go for like a prime Chicharito type player, where someone who specialty is off the ball movement, someone who's constantly going to be making these wild fakes in the box, going to draw players out, and either they open up so much space for themselves that you get them the ball, they score, or they're going to be constantly making these sorts of runs that defenders have to respect, because in this scenario, you hope it's a Chicharito level finisher, someone who gets open and finishes and in turn opens for White. But I think they're going to need one of those three, because it just feels like right now, as it stands, a lot of what ends up happening against low blocks is just guys kind of standing around and not really sure of the sort of decisiveness you need, those quick moments. Like that's the thing with the low block, because of how teams defend, it's moments. You wait a second too long, your shot gets blocked. You make that run too late, someone will pick up on it. Like you need to be decisive, and it feels like the Whitecaps right now against low blocks are a bit too reactive. And I think with either those three profiles, someone who can just shoot from distance with the trigger, that sort of decisiveness will impact defenses. Someone who can dribble, that will impact defenses, or someone who can make off-ball runs. But those are kind of three different profiles to consider. And of course, if you find a player who can do all three, I mean, that sort of player usually plays for a different caliber of club. But hey, if you find someone who does all two of those three or all three, you sign them and you throw whatever money they want. But I think that's something worth considering as they look for that another attacking DP sort of level piece.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go kind of around the horn a little bit on like other things I noted from the Austin match, rapid fire, and then we can kind of move on. As you said, this was one that, was a good match at the time, but I don't know if, we're going to be writing history textbooks about it down the line here. So something that was interesting was, Pedro Vite being on the bench to start this match and Alessandro Schopf getting the start. We were all kind of saying in the press box through 55, 60 minutes, it was like, man, this match could really use Pedro given how much the Whitecaps were on the ball. And I thought that there were some good moments when Pedro came on and the match kind of suited him. So that was good to see. You shouted it out pre-show, Bjorn Inge Udvik. So, man, he's just solid back there, has fit right in and not really missed much of a beat so far as a Vancouver Whitecap. I also thought Tristan Blackman was quite good. You know, the back three did not have a lot to do in this match defensively, but they did have a lot to do in distribution. And I thought Blackman was really sharp on the ball, which he can be a bit like back and forth in that regard. He has really good matches, and then there's the odd one where he's a little off color, but I thought Blackman was solid there. And then Ryan Raposo off the bench, replacing Sam Adekubi. I mean, maybe, you know, this is, again, it's not like Raposo's fault necessarily, but it's kind of the prime example of like the lack of imagination against the low block. How many times does Ryan Raposo whip a tremendous ball into the box, but it's like just a mass of bodies, quite stagnant with no real like dangerous movement? And it's like, those are, you know, Raposo has that ability to hit in those balls. He knows how to get himself in space, but it's just, are the Whitecaps doing enough tactically to like vary those chances? I think that's one where maybe at times someone like Raposo gets blamed a bit for the system rather than, you know, what he's doing. But I thought in a match where ultimately the Whitecaps weren't able to find that goal, Raposo was certainly involved in a lot of the positive play in those wide areas. And, you know, he's been obviously finding goal contributions this season has not been a problem overall. So, you know, he continues to put in good work. Alex, any other things to pick up on from Austin? I think that kind of empties the notebook. I mean, obviously, you know, something that I think about just to round it out is we talk about the tremendous crowd. It's just a shame now that those two biggest crowds of the season so far, Charlotte and now Austin, they've both been low scoring draws that, you know, maybe just have just, there hasn't been that big celebratory moment yet in front of a big crowd. So maybe it'll be against Miami. We'll have to see here upcoming. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, but soccer's so boring. They never score. I always go to these games. They never score.
Man, that's what, you know, I, not that I endorse that kind of view, but that is what I worry about, right? Is that someone bought that Messi four pack and now they've been to two matches and they've seen a combined two goals over the course of 180 plus minutes. And they, you know, each team has only walked out with a point each time. I don't think that's an entirely fair reflection of the way those matches have gone, but some people can't help probably but walk away with that. So hopefully there's a big win on the horizon here.
That's it. You can't watch a game like that and say it was boring, but ultimately nil-nil. That doesn't help. And hey, I just want to hear what Stand By Me sounds like with 30K plus. Like, it's probably pretty sweet. It'd be nice to get that sort. It sounded pretty good with 25,000. So let's see what it sounds like with 30K. Otherwise, yeah, just to empty the notebook before moving on to Cavalry. I think Raposo is going to have to be key over the next few weeks, because if teams throw low blocks, he's perfect for that situation. Like, again, like his output offense, like he generates key passes, he generates shots, he gets into dangerous areas, he helps create for his teammates. What more do you want, right? Like, from an offensive wingback perspective. And then when you're going up against a low block, he had nothing to worry about defensively. He kind of allowed him to focus on his offense, and I thought he was fantastic. So I'd expect to see a lot of him, especially Sam Adekugbe. You know, they, at least it's a calf, but you know, those are tricky. Manage that as well as you can. Don't rush, and you don't need to, because Raposo has been in good form. This will be a good moment for him, especially I imagine we'll see a lot more low blocks thrown at the Whitecaps with their until they prove that they can beat them on a regular basis. And that's Raposo's music. Otherwise, just one note on the defense. The Whitecaps transition defense I thought was remarkable. Every time Austin tried to break, Kubas was just a machine.
I was gonna say,
in them and out.
Kubas was not letting anything pass. It was like Mutombo just swatting the ball away.
It's just that Kubas was Kubassing, and usually when that happens, good things happen defensively. And shout out to the Whitecaps defense, 4 clean sheets in 10 games. Like, that's pretty darn good. The XG as well stayed low. They only kept Austin to 4 shots, and part of that was Austin. You know, you can use the usual tropes, anti-football, they parked the bus, they did. Not to say those tropes are wrong in any way, but Austin also tried to break a few times, and Kubas shut them down. Blackman, like you mentioned, Utvik, Ranko. I thought it was just a very good match all around from that four. And Utvik, man, he's on the field. Goals don't really happen. Chances don't really happen. Manny Sartini facing a real dilemma again. Like we mentioned, I'm not going to dive into it because we've kind of repeated every week, but that's Utvik is causing a problem and in a good way. And that's exciting because it's giving Manny Sartini flexibility. And speaking of, I think that's a perfect segue because Cavalry, midweek, the Whitecaps leg one. This is a big game because there's two ways you can go about it. You can kind of go about it the way they did in 2019, I think it was. Very low event, nil-nil draw, which isn't a bad result on the road. And then you focus on leg two. Or you go guns a-blazing leg one, which comes with risks. Because say you fall flat and you're flat in your face, you're on the road, the pitch, is a bit chewed up. Cavalry's a physical team. You could have easily been caught by surprise. But the Whitecaps, and this is where I think this is the most important point to start with. They showed their depth against Cavalry because what was a big complaint that was had last year that we thought, kind of impacted the team, especially in the summer when they kind of seemed to run out of gas, was that they just were not willing to rotate as much in these cup games. And part of it was faith, right? It was like Yohei Takaoka, he burned out last year, and it was because he played every Canadian championship match, every League's Cup match. Ranko Veselinovic pretty much couldn't come off unless he's metaphorically probably had an IV dripping out of his arm, and you're like, still Ranko, you good to go. Like, yes, sometimes they'd rest Gold and Kubas because they had depth at those positions, but at the back in particular, and the fact, like, I think I'm looking back at this York United lineup, 20, it was last year, the quarterfinal, I think it was Whitecaps York. They had no reason, yet you look, Takaoka was in goal. Ranko, Laborda, Blackman all started at the back. Like they wouldn't rotate their back line, so there was no faith. And the fact is, you head into this game against Calgary, or Cavalry, sorry, but Cavalry in Calgary, they were able to give Ranko a rest. They were able to give Takaoka a rest. They were fine for it. I think that's huge. And across the board, their depth showed out and gave some key rest to some important players.
Yeah, I thought to myself, just to pick up on that, like in the second half of this cup tie, that that's got to be crazy for Cavalry that you've got Kubas and Gold coming off the bench after you're down a goal at home. Like that has to be a bit of a mentally challenging thing to deal with, right? Now, the Whitecaps didn't necessarily, it wasn't like they picked up their play and ran away with it in the second half. I think massive credit, like, okay, the first half was just very, very poor football in general, but that's kind of to be expected in, a lot of rotation, not a great surface. Obviously the weather, was not particularly nice in Calgary on the day. Rain, wind, just condities, for sure. So I can understand why it went that way. I thought Cavalry stepped up their game a ton in the second half and really did a nice job. Like the Whitecaps are dangerous to play against when they're up a goal, because if the other team starts pushing, they can expose themselves and the Whitecaps can hit in those moments. Cavalry did a nice job of creating chances without giving too much away. I was really impressed with that. Then obviously Levante Johnson didn't have a great match, but had a couple moments of one of brilliance and then one of just really solid opportunistic striker play when he needed it, and that was enough for the Whitecaps. And it would have been an absolutely perfect road cup performance if not for the very, very late goal. And I feel like with that goal, it comes down to you've got Giuseppe Bologna, who's just brand new into the squad. We've talked about how this zonal marking defensive structure is not an easy one to figure out. It just looked like him, Laborda, whoever else was still there at the back, they just weren't on the same page. A nice ball into the box. Malcolm Shaw kind of like scuffs his shot and it just catches Isaac Bomer out. An angle of shot that I don't think Bomer was expecting, and it kind of dribbles into the back of the net. So it's from a tight angle. It's just, I don't know. If I look at that one on film for the Whitecaps, I maybe I wonder about the marking and the setup, but in terms of like the shot, the goal from that angle, I think that's one you live with, and ultimately you're thankful that you scored two goals prior so that that doesn't make the tie more interesting than you want it to be. So the fact that Vancouver was able to rotate pretty heavily, still play well enough, get rest for some of their key guys, give some good auditions to players we haven't seen a lot from. I think it's pretty much all positive. And okay, even that the late goal, I think, keeps the second leg at BC Place interesting, but I don't think it's the end of the world either.
Even then, I think if you're looking at this objectively, I think the Whitecaps nailed pretty much every objective. Because even the late goal aside, Calgary needs to score two at BC Place. They can't, one's not enough, because
I was going to say,
one-one.
it is truly in a cup tie, it's like one of those goals that's only worth half a goal in a way, because
Yeah.
you still have a huge uphill battle.
That's it. And that's the benefit of away goals, right? You go out and you get your goals on the road. It helps, it rewards you, and that's something where I feel like it's so for the Whitecaps, Calgary now has to come. 1-0 is not enough for them, so they need two. The Whitecaps, given how good they are defensively, especially what this year they've only allowed more than one against the Galaxy, against Portland, against RSL. Other than that, it's been one or less in every MLS game to date. And of course, the Galaxy are a juggernaut. RSL is a pretty good team. The Whitecaps, that's a good sign. They rotated. Gault only played 45. Keeps him fresh for LAFC. White only played 45. Kubas played, what, 30? Fafapico was left out altogether, so you can let him rest. He's dealt with back spasms recently. Like, pretty much, like, yeah, across the board, I think that was a win in terms of how the squad was managed. Levante Johnson gets a brace, so his confidence gets up. Right, because that striker is, he didn't have the greatest of game, but he scored. And you could see the confidence his first goal gave him, because the second goal was so well taken. And maybe that doesn't happen if he doesn't have that wonder strike of a first goal. Ali Ahmed was great. You only played him 60, you kept him fresh. Like, you rested Ranko, you rested Yohei Takaoka, you gave Bomer minutes. Like, really, it nailed all across the board. And also, this just as an aside, just because this was something that I thought of at the top. The Whitecaps also played five Canadians. And I want to say that's something small, but I thought that was really cool and important, because the Whitecaps at times in the past, especially in this competition in the last few years, they've kind of gone like guns out, play all our international guys, play the minimum three Canadians, sometimes have two Canadians on the field. I think it was nice to see them lean on their Canadian guys. And I think that's something that's just, it's nice to see. Again, it's something little. Like, again, the rules are the rules, so never gonna fault them for going all in. But I thought it was good to see some of their Canadian guys get a chance, like a Priest. So yeah, this audition for Priest didn't go as well as, say, it was against New York, where I was singing his praises. This one was maybe a bit more one to forget. But to see him out there getting a chance, Bomer getting a chance, Raposo, Ahmed, Levante Johnson. I thought that was also a bit of an aside that I liked. But yes, all that to say, by pretty much every quantifiable metric the Whitecaps would have wanted, I think you can consider this a success, because they did what they needed to. And I think the biggest factor, and again, the sign of what this team can do, they dictated the game on the road. And yeah, it was an ugly game, and yeah, it was low event. That's what they want. This Cavalry team, if you have a chance to watch them in the CPL, do it. They're a fun team to watch. Like, they, when they get going, they could be very good on the ball. They can get forward. It didn't help they were missing Ali Moussi in this game, and you have to wonder if he's fit in time for leg two, because just having him on the field will bring us a bit of something different they lacked. But the reality is, Cavalry just weren't given the time or space to play and run and play their sort of game they want to. And that's how, credit to the Whitecaps, mucking it up, keeping it low event, hitting them on the counter. Like, what have we said? What are the Whitecaps at their best this year? It's part of the reason why they've been better on the road than at home. It's because when you let them sit back, defend, make the game ugly, hit in transition, they're lethal. Cavalry tried to play on the front foot. The Whitecaps slowed things down, got the job done. So, no, I thought this was a perfect cup performance. It wasn't pretty, but sometimes when you're going on the road, that's what you have to do. You have to manage these scenarios, because if you go out and you get overconfident, Cavalry has the firepower. They showed it. They could have scored a couple even before to they did. The Whitecaps manage, and even and as for the goal, it's one where even you chalk up, because what does Vanny always say about the low block, or not the low block, the zonal system? He says, look, it's a utopia. In an ideal world, you defend 100% perfect, you keep a clean sheet, great. The reality is there's breakdowns that can happen if a new guy's in, or if you know Blackman makes a wrong step and does the conceptual error. That's football. And I think credit really has to be given to Lucas Diaz, someone on Cavalry, very promising young player. You're going to see a lot of him as this year goes along, as he gets more minutes. He just played a phenomenal ball. And that's sometimes what happens, that when you make those rare errors that Vanny says happens, like, you're never going to have a 100% perfect game. They just got caught out at the worst time. And given that for the most part, they haven't had that happen all that much to them lately, you chalk it up to a well done from Cavalry, and you move on, because all things considered, I don't think that hurt the game plan of the Whitecaps and what they wanted out of this tie.
No, exactly. I think that's very much how I view the second goal. Okay, in terms of individual players a little bit, you mentioned Ralph Parise already. I guess a disappointment for me, if I had to pick one from the match, was just the it seemed like Berhalter and Parise as a duel in the middle of the park there really struggled. And I wrote about this in the report card, and but we haven't talked about it, Alex. So I'm curious for your thoughts. We've, you know, there's been a lot of midfielder content on this podcast over the years. So I'll bring this to you. My thought is just that there were some people online, either during the match or after the match, like freaking out about the midfield depth. And I guess broadly speaking, I understand those concerns, but I also think it's maybe not as bad as people think. And this is why. I think Berhalter, Parise. Now, Parise is a bit more of an unknown, but at least with Berhalter, we've seen that, like, with other strong players around him in a system where he has a very defined role as, like, the Kubas understudy, he can really do a job and boss it. The thing in this match is, I feel like Parise and Berhalter were being asked to do a lot. They were being asked to kind of take that midfield and marshal it all on their own. And I'm just not sure they had the chemistry, nor were they just kind of like maybe neither of them seems like a take the charge, you know, kind of organize the whole midfield on their own type player. And so to me, it was like almost more the chemistry of lack or lack thereof, the you know, just that assertiveness that they didn't have that maybe let them down. So I don't think it means that they're bad squad depth at the MLS level. It's more just that this was not the best role to play them in.
And it's not the best game for them either. Like, you know, the pitch, for example, just to go there, you don't want to use that as an excuse from their perspective, but their kind of job in the buildup was to drop in and play, and it wasn't easy. Like, Ralph Preece almost scored an own goal because a pass played into him. He wasn't able to corral it first time, maybe like he's used to on other pitches. Yeah, those are something where some guys adjust, but also it depends on the game, because someone like Priso is one of his good skills that he is his tempo setting. And that's something where against Red Bulls, he came on, I thought he did a good job of kind of, helping set the tempo, especially when the Whitecaps went up a guy. And that's something as well with Berhalter. He's a good passer, and I don't think he was able to show it as much with the pitch, and also with Cavalry's, because Cavalry weren't pressing high, but they had a very aggressive, like, mid block. And that's kind of something they want to do. Especially that's why someone like Charlie Trafford is so key. He's just relentless counter pressing Gutierrez. That's why they had Gutierrez as a 10, usually plays an 8. They really wanted his counter pressure, and that also contributed. I think it just wasn't really the game for Berhalter or Parise. And I think this was also one where I think this was a bit of a test, right? In terms of, all right, in this sort of system, who are some guys who can step up and drive the play? And as expected, someone like Ali Ahmed really thrived, right? This is someone who can be a play driver at the MLS level, so of course he's going to thrive. But for guys like Parise and Berhalter, especially Parise, who's newer to the system, and Berhalter hasn't quite, it's hard to say. Berhalter hasn't quite graduated to being a full-time, like, starter, I guess you can say. He's still, when it's Kubas in, and usually Vite, right? He hasn't quite graduated the role where he's shown glimpses that it can be Berhalter and Kubas in specific situations, but we haven't seen him be relied upon in that regard. Also, yeah, just it shows that there's still some work to do in that regard. I think ultimately I'm not too worried because again, I think the game state, even like when Kubas came in, Kubas was Kubas, he always was, but it wasn't like he was miles and miles better than what was there before. It was just he came in, was solid defensively. By then the Whitecaps already had the lead. He helped shut things down. So I don't know. I'd say you just need more time. I think the home leg could be really interesting to see what kind of lineup they put out, especially now that they've got this lead. They know that Cavalry needs to score at least two. I'm very curious to know what kind of lineup they put in, but I'd like to see, you know what, double down on Prieto and Berhalter, give them another look and see what they can do at home in more comfortable situations and see is this all right? Is this something where there is genuinely something to be worried about, or if you can just write it off, cup match conditions, team that was counter pressing aggressively, those sort of factors.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess just to pick up a couple last things from the match, I thought that, it was certainly in the first half quite physical, and it felt to me like, I don't know, maybe this is like Vancouver Whitecaps bias showing, and the CPL fanboys can come at me, but it looked to me like the Whitecaps had like a level of physical intensity that at times Cavalry wasn't ready for. And it felt like every time contact was initiated, Cavalry was headed to the turf and looking for a foul. And I think sometimes, at the MLS level, that's just kind of play on. And so I thought that was interesting. And that was part of maybe like certainly for someone like Berhalter, that was a bit of a struggle for him because he kept picking up, fouls against him because he was getting involved in those physical exchanges. Also, okay, it's a tough day weather-wise, but man, that environment at Spruce Meadows and that backdrop for a football match is just top tier. It's tremendous. So despite the fact that the Whitecaps haven't had a lot of luck there historically, I do enjoy every time they make a trip because it's just a great backdrop, great support, lots of fun. There were a couple of the mics around the stadium were hot because there was someone just yelling profanities at the top of their lungs. And then you must have been close to one of the mics. So that provided a little bit of extra entertainment as well. But no, I mean, that's pretty much it for me on the CanChamp match. I like you, I'm looking forward to the second leg. I presume the Whitecaps will put up something similar in terms of a starting 11, where it's kind of a mix of starters, but also Canadians in depth. I don't see why Bomer wouldn't go back in goal again. And yeah, maybe just like run it back with some guys like Parisso, Berhalter, Levante. They need minutes, right? And they need starts at some point down the line here just to get that familiarity, consistency, comfort level. You talked about Levante's confidence, which can be huge for a striker. So I guess, yeah, I'm kind of anticipating more of the same for the second leg. And like you said, I think the friendly confines, the more predictable surface, I think it's probably, I'm assuming BC Place is wider than Spruce Meadows as
I think
well.
so,
There's
slightly.
some more room to operate. So I have to feel all of that will play into the Whitecaps' hands. So, I don't foresee something other than the Whitecaps being able to, advance reasonably comfortably. Although, again, I thought Cavalry put up a really good fight, especially in the second half, played some good football. So full credit to them because they're playing well in league. At least they picked up some points against BC teams in the CPL, and maybe this will give them a bit of a boost of confidence as the Premier League season rolls on.
Yeah, and I think if Ali Moussi's back, that's something that'll definitely add another layer. So, something to watch. What I'm curious to see is how far the Whitecaps swing the pendulum, because I'm thinking their schedule is brutal for those, again, unfamiliar. Like I mentioned, to start May, they played on May 4th, Austin. They play May 7th, Cavalry. Now, this weekend, May 11th, they play away to LAFC. No rest for the Wicked. They then play Wednesday, May 15th. Against Colorado on the road. That's going to be a tough matchup. It's hard to know what to make of this Colorado team. And then 3 days later, they have to go to Seattle. So that week's going to be tough. I imagine knowing them or knowing the schedule, I find it hard to believe they'd come from LA to Vancouver. Maybe they will. But they're definitely going to have to go straight from Colorado to Seattle, or because if they do go, what's the point of going up to Vancouver and then just down to Seattle? That week's going to be tough. And then just 3 days after the Seattle game, that's when they host Cavalry on May 21st. And then right after, you got Miami on 25th. That's one where you need to go guns a blazing with how good Miami's looked. I want to be showing up half-handed with that one, especially with the big crowd. And then right after that one, you got Sporting KC on May 29th, and then Colorado again on June 1st, before finally with the international break, they get 14 days off. Although a couple guys, you know, will be heading on international break. All that to say, it's a rough schedule. So I wonder with guys, like how far they dip into that pendulum. Like, yeah, no doubt, guys like Parise, Berhalter, Levante, Omer, you name it, will be leaned on across that stretch, not just in the Can Champ, but also in some of those midweek MLS games. So I wonder if they see that Cavalry game, maybe it's a chance to go further and give Jeevan Badwal a chance, for example, in midfield, and see what he could potentially look like if you gave him his debut, even if it's 45 off the bench. Is this the perfect time for Bilal Halbouni? He didn't travel with the squad at this time, but maybe in a few weeks he'll feel he's ready to get his first rep. So again, maybe it's 45 off the bench if you don't want to throw him in right away. Do you look like, is that how deep you go on the bench in terms of some of the other guys as well, an MLS Next Pro, and like a Malcolm Simmons again in midfield if you want to throw in something different to explore your midfield depth, or at wing back, Elliot Goldthorpe's had a decent start to the year. Maybe throw him in just to throw in something different. That's where I'm curious how deep they go, especially with the schedule. So the schedule is the big factor, and I think that's why that first leg will be seen as a win for the Whitecaps. Not only did they get it done, but heading into a busy stretch, having that Cavalry situation be in a scenario where they have to play all their big guns would not be ideal for them. So now that they can head in that game with a bit of a cushion, I wonder how confident they are in some of their depth and how far they lean. Because I think that I don't think Kubas and Gold start, for example, but I think Vanny will keep them on the bench. But other than those two, like how confident is he to call up some of those Caps two guys? I'm curious to see.
And I feel like it will really depend on how these coming weeks go, how beat up the squad gets, how guys' legs are doing, all that kind of stuff. I mean, if you have a 3 or 4-1 victory where you're up in the second half and you can sub guys off in the 75th minute and manage, well, okay, then your options open up a little bit more. But if every match is, hard fought 1-1, 2-2 to the 90th minute and guys are really pushing, then that wear and tear can really add up. So we'll have to see how it goes. But yeah, the Whitecaps certainly set themselves up pretty much almost as well as they possibly could have for the second leg. Okay, Alex, time to go around MLS just a little bit. Rivalry week upcoming, but we'll look back at what happened in the week. And for me, there's one Western Conference team to really take note of in two different respects. Real Salt Lake continued to roll in the league, and in a Western Conference where there's a lot of, I think, good to pretty good teams, but not necessarily great teams. RSL looks like that one side that might just have a bit of a different level they can hit on a regular basis. Now, that being said, they did not hit that level in the US Open Cup midweek, bowing out of the competition. So just classic, a classic reminder of what the cup can provide. I mean, you had all kinds of crazy stuff going on in US Open Cup. I think what was it, Detroit that advanced as well, if
Yeah,
I'm
they
remembering.
beat who did they beat? They beat the Dynamo on penalties, and Dynamo are the defending champs. And as far as I'm aware, the Dynamo put out like a decent lineup. Like, yeah, they rotated a bunch of guys, but there were some starters. They brought on Karaskia, Bassi, Artur, all off the bench. And
I mean,
Detroit got it done.
Seattle only got through on penalties. So that shout out to New Mexico United. They were the side that beat Real Salt Lake 4-2. So, didn't even take a greasy nil-nil penalty shootout. They did it in regular time. So that was something that I watched out for. And yeah, I think, ultimately, we were talking about before the show, it's kind of bad news for the Whitecaps because now RSL can focus on league play. and they're not going to be distracted by multiple competitions. So you make of that what you will. Elsewhere for me in MLS this past weekend, Nashville blowing the doors off Montreal. It's tough to see for our friends out east, but I don't know. Things seem a little bit discombobulated there at the moment. Yeah, who would have thought that? I think everyone would have thought going into the season that TFC would clearly be the third best team amongst those Canadian MLS teams, but it might be Montreal at the moment. And then I mentioned it previously, but Lionel Messi and Inter Miami just going off against the Red Bulls. We talked about their uncompromising strategy. That is the Red Bulls' uncompromising strategy. Their lack of ability to sit back in a low block, and I think it came and bit them a little bit against Miami.
Yeah, man, lots to dive into this week. I mean, I'll try to keep it short because there's a lot to look forward to. But first, I just want to say on the TFC point, don't look now, but Toronto FC is tied for fifth in MLS, just out of the Whitecaps. In fact, of course, the Whitecaps have a game in hand, and should they win that, they'd be in very good position. But TFC, it looked like they were falling off a cliff when the Whitecaps battered them, and they're in that stretch. But Herdman's got the mentality warriors rolling there, and it's gonna be interesting to see if they can keep pushing, if they can add to this in the summer. A lot of interesting times. But yeah, out west, not really much to talk about. RSL, I mean, you said it. I think for me, they've kind of tipped themselves into really the into that very close to contender status. It's 11 games. It's a lot to 18 goals for, 9 goals against, good underlying numbers. They're getting the job done against good teams. They seem right now like they're one of the early favorites out the West. And I think the other team, though, that I'm keeping an eye on, although it's hard to really tell, because again, some of their wins as of late have been over mixed opposition, it's Minnesota United. This week, they beat up on an Atlanta team that's struggling, 2-1 on the road. That was a great result. Canadians involved, Dane Sinclair there. Tanny Oluwaseyi on fire, third straight goal. But Minnesota's quietly picking up results, and they're right in there. And I'm very fascinated to see how this Whitecaps team matches up against Minnesota, because I really, yeah, don't know how to feel. I feel RSL is a lot more definitive. It feels like they've entered that good team status. But Minnesota, they flirted with it early. They kind of slowed down, then quietly just back-to-back wins, pushed them right back in the mix. The West, we'll just continue to say it every week. So it really is just waiting for someone to step up and have a real like 4, 5, 6 game win streak. And that's really, again, what's been killing the Whitecaps. It's the style I'll continue to ride until they change it. It's been since 2022, I think, at least, since they've either won 3 games in a row or drawn 3 games in a row. Even last year when they had that stretch in August, there was always they'd win two and they'd draw one and then win one. So that, like, they haven't straight up won three, but they haven't lost three. And that just kind of puts them in a above average, because again, you're picking up points with the draws. But in MLS, sometimes those teams, you can rip off 4 or 5 straight wins. That means more in the end of the season than those who don't lose, right? So it's like for the Whitecaps, it's interesting because they're in a position now where they're not really losing many games, but that's how you end up fourth. Whereas if you could trade two of those draws for wins, but then, trade the other draw for a loss, you'd be in a better position, right? Just the way it goes. So that's something to keep an eye out for the Whitecaps. There's a lot of teams like them. There hasn't been really anyone who stepped up, had a prolonged stretch of wins, and then pushed up the table. Whereas at the East, Miami, man, they're starting to pull away, and it's going to be curious to see what happens. They can keep the guys healthy. What happens with Copa America when Messi's inevitably pulled out of the picture? Because obviously, as we've seen, that's where things can go off the rails. But I think they've done enough to make the playoffs, and that's scary because, unless there's injury, that makes them instant favorites because they'll put out their best lineup in the playoffs, and that's going to be terrifying because, man, Messi going at it, it's certainly a sight to behold. And this weekend, that's something to watch. It's a good transition point. We talked about Montreal and their struggles. They lost 4-1 to Nashville team that was struggling. I thought Montreal could have got a draw out of that. I picked Jonathan Siriwa fantasy. He gave me nothing. That was a bit of a mistake on my part. They play Miami this week, and that one that could be ugly, especially it's at home. It's on grass. You know, Messi always loves playing on grass. Very curious to see how Montreal fares in that one, because they had a tough match in midweek with Forge. Forge gave them a good run. Montreal to use a quadruple substitution at halftime to get back in the game down 1-0. And to their credit, they got a good 1-1 road result. But it feels like Montreal could be a bit ripe in the picking. And that's one of many. Like you mentioned, it's rivalry week this week. So some of the matches are very interesting, like Timber Sounders, right? It's kind of like, can't which of the Cascadia teams can find their form? I think that's going to be a good matchup. You also got, out east, you got the Hell is Real, Cincinnati and Columbus. That's a heavyweight matchup, in my opinion. Those are two top teams. There's some good matchups there. And then one that's not really a rivalry, but it's a good one, Galaxy Salt Lake. Like, that's, again, can either of them put a convincing enough performance that we can really, like, can RSL win and really show that, yeah, okay, we're right. They are a top dog, or is LA going to beat them 3-0 and then we're going to be here next week? Well, just kidding. Maybe the West still remains a giant, big question mark.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm watching for those two Western Conference matchups. As you said, can Galaxy or Salt Lake assert themselves? Can any team in the West manage to string wins together with any kind of consistency? And then, yeah, Timber Sounders. It's like who can fight their way off the mat here, because both sides been struggling a little bit lately. Obviously, I mean that Seattle's been a real mess. Portland. I feel like they should be a lot better than they are. Like I've seen a lot of really like from Portland this year, but they're on 10 points through 12 matches, like or through 11 matches, pardon me. Like how the heck does Portland have the same point total as Seattle at the moment? Because it feels like Seattle,
That boggles the mind.
everything possible has gone wrong. Portland, man, it feels like they were up
They
in
had
four.
good
They were
stretches.
up fourth, fifth in the West just a couple weeks ago. So the table's still very condensed. I mean, you only have 8 points between fourth, where the Whitecaps are, and 12th, where Portland is. So, now again, Vancouver still got that match in their pocket, so they're sitting pretty a little bit in comparison. But some of these teams, let's like we're about to talk about LAFC sitting on 15 points with 11 matches played. Seventh in the West, if you're in that kind of position, it's wide open. You could be anywhere between third or fourth in a couple weeks, or you could be down in 10th to 12th. That's certainly where the Western Conference is right now. I mean, Alex, without any further delay, is it time to dive into what's upcoming this weekend for the Whitecaps in league play, which is a trip down to, I want to say the bank, but it's no longer the bank, to what is
A
now
different bank.
BMO Field. Do I have that correct?
And BMO
Or
Stadium doesn't roll
BMO
off the tongue the
Stadium.
same.
That's right. Something weird about Bank of Montreal Stadium in Los Angeles, California. I'm not sure how to feel about that one. But obviously,
Well,
this is a team of championship pedigree with name brand players with a history of success. A team that the Vancouver Whitecaps have seen far too much of the last couple seasons, whether it's Champions League at the time, League's Cup, they're going to see them this season, and the MLS playoffs last year. So these are opponents that the Vancouver Whitecaps are familiar with, but it's not been the dominant LAFC that we've sort of gotten used to in the Western Conference. This has been a By the advanced metrics, still a very good LAFC team. And I think you can watch them play at times and you can see how they can still reach those elite levels. But you look at match in, match out, it's been chaotic. Whether it's red cards, comebacks, high scoring, just weird, fluky stuff happening. A couple of their wins have come off of Denny Bouanga drawing questionable penalty decisions. It's just kind of been all over the place. It feels like that baseline level of consistency that LAFC has maybe enjoyed the last couple of years, I'm not sure that's there anymore. The top tier play, again, Bouanga, Tillman's been having a really good season in terms of offensive output. They still have a lot of qualities that you like. They're still a dangerous team. But I don't know if they're as bulletproof as they felt maybe the last couple seasons.
Yeah, it's first of all, I just want to say, if you want to impress your MLS friends or see who's really paying attention, ask them the trivia, which two stadiums in MLS does the Bank of Montreal sponsor? And if any of them pick Montreal, fools, it's Toronto and LA. Who would have thought?
Naturally, as we all would have expected.
Yeah, but yes, unexpected things, and that's a good way to, like you mentioned, to put this LAFC team like on at surface a lot. It's business as usual. They're an absolute XG creation machine. Denis Bouanga is scoring goals. They've been all right defense, pretty darn good defensively, actually, I can say. Their expected goal difference is great. A lot looks good at first glance, but at the same time, feels like there's been cracks. I've seen rumblings, you know. Steve Cherundolo is the head coach. Not saying he's going to get sacked, but somewhere, you know, looking at him and be like, oh, is this someone who B basically question his pedigree of a coach and wondering about what he inherited as a roster. 'Cause let's be real, they've always had a good roster. Then there's also some questions across the lineup in terms of, I mean, we've mentioned it a few times in around MLS and five, which hey, so it's sometimes useful to listen to that segment. I mean, I don't blame you if you want to just skip ahead and listen to all the local footy talk, but sometimes it does end up being relevant for the Whitecaps. One thing we mentioned, LAFC, it feels like they haven't replaced some of those guys they've lost, like the consistency of Avella up front, some of their midfield options, especially on the defensive side, with an Acosta gone, with a Cifuentes at the back too, like. Their center back core is, you know, they've been starting former NYCFC 34-year-old defender Maxime Chaneau back there, which you know, it's not the same luxury of a Chiellini or some of these other names they've had over the years. You know, that's the center back they haven't been as imposing. And Hugo Lloris, he's no Max Crespo. Who would imagine saying that out loud, but. Lloris struggled a bit. Maxime Crespo is one of the best in MLS. This LAFC team has cracks, and it's fascinating because they're kind of playing well by the underlying metrics. And you watch them, they do good things. But the reality is, it shows the importance of, you know, something like goalkeeping, right? You can have a great defense, but if you're allowing cheap goals, it can hurt you. Or, you know, at the other end. You know, you can be generating chances, and they've underperformed their XG by 3, which isn't terrible, but sometimes that can be the difference between winning, especially when you're allowing cheap goals at the other end, right? So it's like that sort of stuff ends up adding up. So yeah, it's this LAFC team is a bit of a strange one, and I'm very curious to see where they end up going from here, because there's definitely potential for them to be a top team. They should be a top team. But as for this match in particular, something to watch out for, of course, LAFC played in midweek. They played the Las Vegas Lights, ended up being a good game. Las Vegas or LA went up, Las Vegas tied it, but then LA scored two late goals, and they played a lot of big guns. Like Denis Bouanga went the full 90, Tillman Atuesta started, Aaron Long started at the back, a lot of rotation otherwise. But you know, Ilya Sanchez came in off the bench. Like they went relatively strong lineup for that one. The fact that, you know, this game's just 2 days later, Saturday night, BMO Stadium. The Whitecaps rotated a lot more, so it'll be interesting to see if they're a bit fresher, and maybe if LA will feel that, okay, maybe we shouldn't have given Bouanga a 90-minute run in Vegas in midweek.
So it sounds to me like your impression of the weakness in this team is kind of the same, which is that they've just lost a little bit too much from that midfield and defensive line, where it's just not quite at that level. Again, even though the underlying numbers still say this is a really good defensive team, this is a long-term platform for success. I think for me, having watched some of their matches or seen highlights, whatever, even just looking at the numbers, this is the thing for me is that it feels like this season, when they concede, they tend to concede in bunches and things kind of get away from them. And I think not having maybe the, you know, not even that someone like Chiellini played a ton, but there isn't like that same steady presence back there. Lloris doesn't seem to have provided that maybe in the way the squad was hoping for. It's kind of been the opposite, where when things get hectic, maybe Lloris is used to, you know, a slightly different level of defending in front of them and not having to manage those situations quite the same way. And so, you know, you look at there have been a lot of matches this season where the XG figures have been neck and neck, and LAFC's conceded three goals. No better example than Levi's Stadium this past weekend, where, you know, LAFC creates 1.9 XG, the Earthquakes create 1.5, but they lose 3-1, right? Like that's just been something that's, you think that that's unsustainable, but when it happens again and again over the course of even, you know, 10, 11 matches, something's going on there. You know, losing 3-2 to the Colorado Rapids, where the XG numbers were relatively level. Losing 2-0 to Minnesota, they did get a little more dominated in that match. You know, they out XG'd the heck out of Sporting KC, but it was a nil-nil draw. They did just properly get blown out by RSL, and that was that snow match. So maybe that's one you kind of toss away and you don't think too much about. But you know, I mean, even in hindsight, that opening day matchup between LAFC and Seattle, the fact that Seattle went so toe to toe with LAFC and then it proceeded to be very poor in the league, it just makes you wonder a little bit. Again, I just not a side that's kind of taking care of business the way you expected. Like, I feel like LAFC of a year or 2 years ago, you go to Levi's Stadium, you're playing the Earthquakes, who have been really struggling. That's not one you let get away from you like that. But that's happened to this LAFC team this season. I just don't know if the consistency's there. I think it's interesting because looking ahead to this weekend, obviously at home, I think the Gal not the Galaxy, pardon me. You need some kind of terminology for, I guess, the black and gold, but there is no, like, what do you call LAFC? I think that's a good question. But LAFC is going to want to take it to Vancouver, and I think, you know, and really try to create chances and score goals. And I feel like that kind of plays right into the Whitecaps' hands, right? Like, they're willing to sit back and absorb some of that pressure and then hit in the counter. So I don't mind this matchup for Vancouver. I think that we'll have to see if, you know, LAFC has something up their sleeve, but I think this one could be wide open, and you know, there certainly could be opportunities for the Caps. Although I should note that LAFC has been very good at home. Of their 15 points, 14 of them have come at home, one has come on the road. So that's true prototypical MLS home and road form there for LAFC.
Yeah, who needs to travel, right? When you just have all the fun at home. Yeah, I think this LAFC team, I think the big loss is Crepo. I really do. I think that's one where they just really bundled that. Like they genuinely did, especially seeing that Crepo stayed in MLS, that Crepo left with a lot of respect for LAFC. I mean, you've seen it in the two times they've played each other. LA Crepo like went and said hi to the support LA supporters before the match. Like that one really feels like if it was a matter of salary, because I know Loris came in at a ridiculously low salary, but just like this is like late 30s Hugo Loris, one who's already had very clear flaws that have, you know, hurt him at time with the French national team and, you know, and why he lost his starting spot with Tottenham. It's just, again, it's something where it's name over what is actually being brought to the table. It feels like that's not a thing LA needed, but hey, maybe it's something that was them playing the long game, as in no Lloris, no Giroud, and Giroud feels like he's going to be a very key piece to that attack that helps maybe mitigate some of what I was mentioning with no more Villa in the mix and some of these other guys they've lost over the years. But yeah, I just really think that Lloris one was a big one, because when I'd watch LAFC over the last few years, especially like the last two specifically, where look, they've pretty much, that was a perfect stretch. They won MLS Cup and a Supporters Shield in 2022. They were very close to winning another, or they were in the mix to almost win another Shield last year. They made an MLS Cup final. Like, that's a very good 2 year stretch. They made a Champions Cup final as well in there. And I'd watch them play and like they go toe to toe, right? That's their style. They'd play very on the front foot, hold a lot of possession, get attacks. But then Crepo is so key because sometimes their defense leaks. They're playing a high line. Sometimes Chiellini in the high line was a bit of an adventure stylistically, But they knew that, oh, Crepo was there for us on breakaways in transition. And then their set defense was fine. And I just think, yeah, with no Crepo there, they kind of have lost that. So, yeah, this LAFC team, I think these are all things you want to hear from the Whitecaps. Why the Whitecaps are at their best when they get to sit back and let other teams come at them, hit them in transition. Fafa Pico's rested after not playing in midweek. Trying to hit LA on those counter moments. Those are all things that are screaming good things for the Whitecaps and something to watch as they head into this matchup.
Yeah, it should be an interesting one. Always looking forward to it. I mean, yeah, without Kripo there, maybe not quite the same level of like personal juice that there was in seasons past, but still, Mark Dos Santos there on staff, and obviously the history between these two sides over the last couple seasons, and the Whitecaps have had, at least in regular season MLS play, a decent degree of success against LAFC, I think in part because of that stylistic matchup. So Alex, we want to dive into starting 11 and score prediction for this one.
Yeah, let's do it. It's going to be an intense matchup. That's for sure. It's going to be a hot one. And just the same way my computer is overheating now because it's a hot one in Vancouver, it's going to be a hot one on the weekend. So looking forward to it. But yeah, in terms of lineup predictions, good question. I'm going to go the Whitecaps. I think you're going to see Takoka slot back in goal. The back three is where all the fun really happens. I think Ranko Veselinovic will start. But did Utvik do enough in that audition? Does Laborda stick in Blackman? I'd say you see Utvik and Blackman. Just because Blackman was rested, so it feels like a no-brainer. He comes in. I see Utvik, but we'll remain to be seen. In terms of the wingbacks, that one's a bit tougher because I've said Raposo is going to feast against low blocks. This feels like a team where he won't see much of a low block. So I don't know if he ends up slotting in. I think Kubas and Vite, it ends up being the midfield. They go back to that familiar setup. As for the wingbacks, I think Ahmed ends up being one. As for the other, either maybe Luis Martins, just because he came in midweek, looked okay. Could also be Javane Brown, who played midweek. Feels like it's one of those two in this game. You need a bit more of a defensive one versus throwing out a Raposo. Then I think you go Gold, White, Pico. So really the only questions, kind of as usual, is that second wingback. I think they go a bit more defensive, and I'll say Martins. I think they go Vite Kubas, and the back three, I want Utvik, Blackman, Ring.
Okay, I only have one note. I think maybe we're forgetting about something here. Alessandro Schopf back at the wingback spot. I feel like that's the play in this matchup. Vite and Kubas in the midfield, Ahmed on the one side, Schopf on the other. I feel like Schopf is like your closest Adekubi comp. Now that you don't have Sam in that role, I think the we've seen that Schopf could do a job and be dynamic and add to the attack. And he is defensively aware of, like, he's not a liability, especially from that. He's talked about it, how I think he's more comfortable defending and can be more impactful in that wide position where everything's kind of in front of him. And, you know, he's not forced to take the ball on the half turn and stuff like that. So I'd like to see him get kicked back out into that role, because I feel like he just not only has more impact on the ball, but also, you know, is a little more comfortable defensively as well. And I think he'd fit the bill against LAFC. Otherwise, no notes there. I agree with you on the back line. They started Utvik, Veselinovic, and Blackman against Austin. It was a good defensive performance. I just feel like they're going to go back to that. I feel like they want to give Utvik a bit of a run here. And, you know, it was nice to see, I guess just to pick up on this as a Cam Champ note, but it was nice to see Matias Laborda start in the center of the back three. We've been talking about that in the show for a while. I wouldn't mind seeing Utvik there at some point too, but maybe, you know, Vanny feels like Utvik's tendencies are better suited to that wide role. I think preparing for a potential Utvik, Blackman, and Laborda back three at some point is something at least worth looking at. So I'm glad that they had someone else in the middle of the back three there against Cavalry. But yeah, I think same as you, that that back line from Austin is probably what they're going to roll with. And yeah, just really that wide spot could be Raposo too. That they played Raposo against LAFC before, so that would be straightforward. But I could see Schopf. I think you're right. Could also see Javain was solid against Cavalry, so maybe he's earned himself another start. Luis Martins looked totally fine off the bench, so that's an option as well. And then whatever you don't do in terms of starting 11, you can certainly shift to 55th, 60th minute if you like.
Yeah, I like that. Little bit of Schopf. Let him cook in the Schopf role. I'm not opposed to that. Man, predictions. Tough to say. It's tough because it feels like a fool's errand to bet against LAFC at the BMO. Can't say at the bank. They're always cash money at the bank, or at least, can they are they the same now at BMO? Because again, I think some of the signs indicate that this could be a game that plays to the Whitecaps' strengths. A lot of their guys are rested, etc. I'll do it because why not? I think that's kind of just how I feel about this. I think this is a sign. This could be a good sign of the Whitecaps' growth if they can go do this and grind it out. I think it's kind of been suited to them, and they keep up their road form, and I think they go grind out a nice little like let's say 2-1 win. You can't keep Bouanga off the board against the Whitecaps. Guy loves scoring too much against the Whitecaps, but the Whitecaps find enough holes in that armor and they get two of their own. Maybe it's a Pico gets something in transition. Maybe it's a set piece or something like that. And they get a 2-1 win. It's a bit bold, but I think after this Austin game, if it always feels like the Whitecaps, whenever they're due something like that, they do well to respond and get what they're due. And after missing all those chances again against Austin, this LAFC team will be a bit more of an open game, and that benefits the Whitecaps. And I think that puts them in a position to grab two, and they keep their strong defensive play, test themselves against a good LAFC offense, and that leads to an important result. So bold, yes, but sometimes you got to go bold.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because I think there's a couple like mathematics or statistics things that maybe point for a disappointing result. I mean, the Whitecaps are 3-0-0 on the road so far this season, a perfect away record. You have to feel like that's going to slow down at some point.
Well, 3-0 at one, or no, three, yeah, 3-1-0, because there's a draw as well against Red Bulls.
Well, what the heck? Well, FB Ref's letting me down then. They haven't updated it. I'm just looking at the top and I'm too trusting. You're totally right. So I don't know what they're doing. But anyways, they're near perfect record away from home. I feel like that's gonna hit a bump in the road at some point. Also, two draws in a row for the Whitecaps in league play. I feel like, maybe that loss is on the horizon, but I'm gonna say 1-1 draw again, in a match that maybe kind of feels like that New York Red Bulls where it could have gone either way, but at the end of the day, both teams, maybe LAFC a little more disappointed to only pick up a point at home, but I think the Whitecaps certainly not only have the quality, but as we mentioned, the mashup favors them enough where I feel like they can get something out of this. Yeah, and I just don't. There's still some things about this LAFC team that I really rate, but I don't know if I have that trust in them as like the unstoppable juggernaut anymore. It felt like LAFC was inevitable, and this season I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that's it. This is like we mentioned with the Sounders a few weeks ago, and they did get a job done. I mean, the Whitecaps already beat LAFC away, so that's not like a bogey that they have to overcome. Well, then do it again, especially that this version seems weaker than the one they beat away last year. Go for it. Prove this is the kind of game where you can prove your mettle as a top Western Conference contender. And look, a draw is not a bad result either. I'll say it now, or we're reflecting, and this is one heading in. You don't mind a draw. So I'm very curious to see how the Whitecaps come out in this one. But definitely, again, like I mentioned, it should be a heat match in terms of the not maybe not in terms of the actual heat. I don't know what the weather is like in LA, but in terms of the firepower at this place, is a good heavyweight Western Conference matchup, at least based on how the early, based on LA's reputation and the Whitecaps start and the fact they've played each other so much, feels like there'll be a bit to prove on both side. So we'll be keeping an eye out on that. But Obviously, that's it for all the MLS chatter. We've done quite a bit. As usual, ended up really emptying the notebook. But of course, there was some League One BC, some CPL this weekend. We'll start with CPL. And a bit of a mixed bag, I guess you could say, for depending on what side of the Georgia Strait, or the Salish Sea that you lie on. Vancouver FC went out on the road, 3-1 loss to Cavalry. Just weren't able to get going early. Cavalry came out flying. Vancouver made things interesting and genuinely had a shot at tying it down 3-0. Like, they got one, they almost got a second. They were knocking, like, it was very out of nowhere. But ultimately, what do they say? Too little, too late is the expression. They fall. They're back at home this week against Atletico Ottawa in a huge game for them to test their credentials. Meanwhile, Pacific. What to say? What to say about Pacific? In CPL play, fourth straight clean sheet, which is a CPL record. Third win in four games. The other one, of course, is a draw. So you don't concede goals, you don't lose games. They're sitting tied atop the table with Ottawa. And the defense is remarkable. The fact, again, this time against York, they kept the clean sheet. They win 2-0. Rayon Moore gets his first CPL goal after scoring his first Pacific goal against the Rovers in midweek. Meanwhile, ended up being an own goal, I think it was, eventually ruled for Max Ferrari, but added Nyjah Reed getting in. And Pacific then shut out Ottawa in the Canadian Championship 0-0, just to make it five clean sheets from six matches, one goal against, if you include all competitions. Man, it's funny. I'm very curious to know how these two teams will line up on May 25th, because right now it seems like Vancouver's got the offense, but just figuring out the defense is kind of like the first two games, their defense was really good, and then maybe it came down a bit to earth. Meanwhile, this Pacific team's been so good defensively, and it still feels like they haven't figured out their offense. It's just funny the contrast in styles right now from both of them in their starts to the year.
Yeah, man, I've been so impressed with what Pacific has been able to do. Shout out Ali and Dom too, who's been awesome so far and just fit right into that team and been a big part of the reason they've been so solid at the back. Need to probably in the long run, mix in a goal or two as well. Like a lot of low event matches and a couple scoreless ones. So I think that's something though where you've talked about this, Alex, where it's a lot easier to you can kind of deal with an elite defensive team is worth more than an elite offensive team, right? And so Pacific's doing that at the moment. If the goals come over time, they're gonna be really dangerous. So huge credit to them. We obviously had our doubts going into the year, and so far James Merriman's been doing a terrific job. I mean, shout out to TSS who took them to the absolute brink as well.
The
And
only team to score against them, we have to say.
exactly. So I mean, League One teams have been showing out in the Canadian Championship these last two seasons. So huge credit to them. On the Vancouver FC side of things, Alex, we were talking about it while we were out at League One BC this season, or this weekend, past weekend, pardon me. I think it's really going to come down to, as you mentioned, can they set things right at home this upcoming weekend? Because winning on the road in the Canadian Premier League is challenging. Vancouver's been very convincing at home and quite poor on the road so far this season. So which of those two sides is going to show up on Sunday? That is a big question. I mean, it's tough. You don't want to pick a guy out, but it was not a banner match for Matteo Campagna, the former Whitecaps FC2 player. And yeah, I think just that when David Norman Jr., Rocco Romeo, when they're really clicking at the back, they can be a good defensive unit. I think it's just that the depth, the consistency there at the back is maybe a little bit thin at times. And guys like Paris G and Caden Cheung when fit and healthy, they're good players, but they're a little more attack inclined, right? And okay, against a Valor team that's not very good, against a Halifax Wanderers team that's struggling, defending is a lot easier against a team like Cavalry. As we saw, even for the Vancouver Whitecaps, that mission is a little bit more complex, right? And it takes some high-level work. And so it feels like VFC is much improved from season one, but maybe we're already seeing that there's still some work to do. I think Ashwin Gottbee's got to really find a way to get some of the depth within the squad integrated and flowing. You can't run out the same 11 match in, match out in the Canadian Premier League. It's just not gonna work over the course of the season. So guys like Elhaj Bah, guys like Grady McDonald, you're gonna need more from them as the season goes on. They're gonna have to get involved and make an impact. And so he has to find a way to put them in a position to succeed. And yeah, I'm really excited. I'm planning on being there Sunday. So hopefully the Eagles can continue their strong home form and maybe erase some of the bad momentum they've had the last couple of weeks. Yeah, man, road matches in the Canadian Premier League. It's a tough ask for sure. That's something I've learned through the last couple seasons covering this league.
Well, I was going to say that's probably the big thing to watch. And maybe this is something that Vancouver is better for it. They got a bit of a taste of being good at home and you're on top of the world. And then they kind of got a reality check of how tough it is to win on the road and where you have to adjust, where teams can hurt you. And maybe they're better for it because they'll learn, right? I think that's why this weekend's key. Like, if they can show that they can reset and be good at home again, that's huge. Because as anyone will mention, if you win all your home games, a couple road draws, couple road wins, usually you're a team near the top of the table at the end of the year. And hey, so far, four games, they've won all their home games, they've lost all their road games. That's not a terrible thing in context. In fact, that's pretty solid all around. That's enough to have them in a playoff spot now, although of course it's way too early to be mentioning those words this time of the season. And I think that's why I'll be interested to see how they respond. And that's where something where I'm curious to see with Pacific. They've had a very home heavy schedule. In CPL play of their four games, three have been at home, and the one away was a short trip to Calgary. Yeah, this week they finally got their first taste of away game in the Canadian Championships. They went to Ottawa. But even then, over the next three, they're all in BC. Two are at home, and then one, of course, is the Derby on May 25th out at Willoughby. And then they play Ottawa at home. So their next four games are all in BC. They've got a home heavy schedule. So this is, I guess, from that perspective, good for Pacific to build up early points, but that's where the real test for them is going to be continuously on the road. They've had two road games, they've had two nil-nil road draws. So clearly they've struck some sort of good formula that, to be fair, if they keep winning at home and drawing on the road, and that's what I just said with Vancouver. So I'd echo that thought with Pacific, but that's something to definitely watch that they haven't really had that. Like Vancouver kind of was like, all right, you got your two home games, you're winning, you're on top of the board or top of the world. It was road can champ match. Boom, that was a tough one. Calgary away, like that's never an easy draw, right? Then it was like York away a few days later. York again, like we mentioned, inconsistent. They sh decided to show a good, put in a good performance. And then you go on the road and it's Calgary away again. It's just a tough sequence of matches all around. So very curious to see how they bounce back. Of course, for those unfamiliar, good weekend for home CPL games. The Pacific hosts Forge in a heavyweight matchup this week, and that's going to be a dandy on Saturday. So if you're out in the island, if you want to see a high-flying Forge Pacific, an early top of the table clutch, that's one I'm keeping my eye on. If not on Sunday, like Sam mentioned, Ottawa's in town to face Vancouver. Another great match because Ottawa have been one of the best teams to watch in the CPL. They can score for fun. This will be a great test. But lastly, just to empty out the notebook, there was some League One BC action this weekend and week. There are three games on the weekend, one in midweek. Just to quickly roll through the scores. And of course, Sam and I both went to one together, and then I went to another one the day after. So it started on Saturday. Burnaby FC hosted Unity. The scores from that one were Unity winning 3-1 in the men's match, and in the women's match it was a gritty 1-1 draw. Then same time, Harbourside hosted Rivers out in Nanaimo. The men picked up a 2-0 win, Harbourside men, that is. And then on the women's side, a 1-1 draw. A lot of draws this week. And then on Sunday, the game I went to, or the games I went to, it was the favorite on the women's side in the Whitecaps, and it was the favorite on the men's side, Rovers. That, of course, it was Whitecaps hosting Rovers, and that manifested itself. The men's game, Whitecaps end up falling 4-1 of the Rovers, who rested guys after mid-week can champ and still were able to get a confident 4-1 victory. On the women's side, the Whitecaps, what a wagon, 7-0 win. They were dominant. They scored early and often in that one. Then lastly, in midweek, Altitude hosted Harborside and helped Altitude's first home game, and did pretty well. Men's end up picking a 2-1 win, which they'll be very pleased with. And on the women's side, the whole bandy of draws continues as Altitude and Harborside battled out for a 2-2 draw. So I guess, Sam, we're at Burnaby Unity. Another, it was a good crowd, entertaining matches. The women's game that was there, we were first four, some very interesting players on Unity. They left one of their best players off the bench, brought her on, Sophie Crowther. She was phenomenal, really helped change the game. And then Burnaby, it felt like Burnaby for a moment there. They were going to kind of do a bit of a smash and grab, but then Unity woke up late and pushed and could have got more. And then, of course, on the men's side, that one was mostly all Unity. They showed why they're one of the top teams in the men's department, in the men's league. But there were also some flashes from Burnaby as they continued to gel as a side there.
Yeah, had a ton of fun out at Burnaby again for a second time this young League One BC season. Yeah, so many interesting things on the in the women's matchup. I mean, shout out to Kate Cartier. That was a banger free kick, kind of low underneath the wall, and just kind of caught everyone out, but was also a great strike. You mentioned Sophie Crowther coming off the bench for Unity. And really putting in work on that right hand side, causing a lot of problems. And then also the quality from set pieces from Tristan Corneille. We
Ridiculous.
were right down there in the corner. She took maybe four or five corner kicks. The first one was like scuffed, it was poor, but then the four or five other corners were just like top class balls into the box. And it felt like only a matter of time before Unity scored, and eventually Elizabeth Hicks was able to get Unity on the board. And yeah, they really pushed for a second goal and I think very easily could have had it, but Burnaby stood up well defensively. A very good goalkeeper in Sarah Lewin as well for Burnaby FC. They have, kind of good leadership at the back there with the keeper, two, kind of strong physical center backs. So I think that's something that's going to play well for Burnaby FC women this season. Even if maybe I feel like sometimes they don't have the splash on the attacking side, but they certainly have a very strong foundation. Flipping it to the men's match, yeah, I think Unity were really impressive there. It took a while for them to break through Burnaby, and it just yeah it took it was a long time coming, but I like the physical intensity of that match, the battle in the midfield. There was a tremendous free kick for Burnaby again in that match. I'm blanking. First name Hamish. I'm gonna have to look up the last name real quick.
Oh yeah,
Stand
that one was
by.
Hamish Ogden, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean that was a phenomenal
Beauty of a
if the
strike.
goal on the women's side was like a low driven ball, this was truly like the looping, curling, dipping around the wall, around the keeper's gloves, just in the side netting. It was a beautiful strike, and really good technique there. But ultimately, yeah, Unity was the better side. Some really high quality players there, some skill, couple former Whitecaps Academy guys in the mix, Victory Shambucho, tireless work rate up front, maybe didn't create a lot, but then he found a goal right at the death, to ultimately seal the deal. And yeah, just really good, high quality football, especially we've seen the last couple of weeks what these League One teams can do against Canadian Premier League opposition. We were talking about it, Alex, you know, the difference in level between League One BC and, you know, some of these bottom end teams in the Canadian Premier League, it's not massive. So it's still really good football. And if you want to get out there and support local community events, this is a tremendous way to do it. So again, really enjoyed my experience, and yeah, I'll kind of hand it over to you for TSS and Vancouver Whitecaps FC Academy on Sunday. Sounds like it was and looked like it was a pretty rainy one, but some really impressive dominant performances on each side there, men's and women's, Alex.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, again, it was just very interesting again too. It's always funny to see the Rovers like on the men's side just a few days after playing a pro team and coming so close to winning, just having to pick it up and get back to semi-professional action. But look, just to echo your thoughts before I dive into that, these guys can play, these guys and, you know, the men's and women's division, you get top soccer every time. That's why I love it to doubleheader. I never leave feeling, you know, unsatisfied with what I watch. There's some incredible players on the women's side that you want to keep an eye out because they'll be on the national team soon enough. Heck, Emma Reagan was someone I got to see live in 2022. She made the national team a year later. Geneva Hernandez-Gray on the Whitecaps, another one who's already gotten a call up. And there are more coming as Project 8 comes in. So some great talent there. And then on the men's side too, some of these guys, hopefully they can keep getting CPL looks, because like we mentioned, the gap between top League One players and CPL players, negligible, if that. Like, it's very similar. It's just a matter of environment, opportunity. And even as we learned with this week, Saya Saint-Laurent went toe-to-toe with a pretty, like, not quite first-choice TFC, but, like, pretty, like, it was like a B.5, I'd say. Like, there's some star, like, they started Azorio, Coelho, they started some of the regulars, and Saint-Laurent, like, it shows that even, like, there's guys at these levels who could play in MLS if they were given the right environment. I mean, it's not outrageous to suggest once upon a time, Joel Waterman within 2 years went from Trinity Western to a year at Calgary to signing with Montreal. They just need that opportunity to have stories like that. So always, that's why I always love getting out to League One when I can. This weekend was a great one. Of course, I was there with you for Burnaby. I'd echo a lot of the thoughts. But the Rovers Whitecaps, yeah, first off, the women's, again, this Whitecaps team is a wagon, really. There's no other way to put it. And really, the only thing that's going to stop them, and it's the question we've asked the last two summers, is what do they do when a bunch of their top players leave for university football at the end of the year? It's happened to them twice in a row, and twice they've won the final despite that. And so it's, you know, I don't think it'll affect them, although this year it really does feel like they could get impacted more than ever just because, they're going to be losing like the Geneva Hernandez-Grays, who's been, you know, the players who'd step up when the others would leave. Because, you know, she's been in the league since she was 15, ditto with the Joy Kim Wemwe, Jamie Perot, and like that core of players in this team, a bunch of them all leaving the university. But again, it's the Whitecaps. They'll find a way to pull in a couple of players who can step up, and I'm sure they'll rotate through. And man, you're just watching them at their best is fascinating. Like in this game, they ended up cruising to a 7-0 win. Geneva Hernandez-Gray had a hat trick from midfield. Ashley Roberts scored a nice one. Joy Kimemwe added one to add to the tally. Noelle Sather scored a beautiful free kick from like 25 yards in the top corner. And then Kiera Blundell, not to be outdone, also scored a free kick just because they had to flex their shooting from distance to make it 7-0. It was tough for the Rovers because, like, genuinely watching that game, they didn't have, you know, it wasn't a bad performance. It wasn't one where you're saying like they got completely dominated. It's just every mistake they made, the Whitecaps put it in their net, and the Rovers were just unable to break through a solid Whitecaps defensive line. And that's what's scary about this Whitecaps team is that they dominate you in subtle ways. It's their ruthlessness, their efficiency, and how they go about their business. So that was something that certainly stood out, but the Rovers will bounce back. They've got a solid squad, and they'll want to get back. And it's just tough to play the Whitecaps first. It's like Unity Women's too. They were so good against Burnaby and showed well. Yet a week before, the Whitecaps cruised to a 5-1 win. That's what they do. As for the men's match, very interested to see the lineup the Rovers rolled out with as they rotated from midweek. For example, Michael Hennessy, the goal scorer against Pacific, the only guy to score against Pacific this year, He ended up starting. Devin Ohea started the assist man for Hennessy in that midweek. You know, Kian Proctor, Ben Halton, they rotated a couple of new guys in along with the regulars, and they showed their depth. They didn't need to lean too hard on their big guys. Ohea opened the scoring. Then Matteo Polisi, who was playing as an eight instead of his usual 10, grabbed a goal. Ended up scoring against his old club. Of course, he was on Whitecaps League One BC team in 2022. And then Masud Habibullah came off the bench and added one for the four Rovers goals. Meanwhile, for the Whitecaps, they did end up finding one through David Ajogbe, who ended up scoring one to at least make things interesting at the end. And overall, it was just a commanding performance from the Rovers. This team is expected to be good. I'd be very surprised if they're not the team to win the CanChamp berth. I do think their main threat in that regard is Unity, and I think that'll be a good matchup when Rovers play Unity, which fittingly leads us nicely to this weekend fixtures, because you won't have to wait long for a matchup of at least, I think, two of the top men's teams in Rovers and Unity. That's this weekend. For those unfamiliar, Unity will host Rovers. So if you're willing to head out to Aldergrove, that's where you can catch two solid matches. And then on the women's side, it'll be a bit of a both teams that got bounced by the Whitecaps. Who ends up kind of picking their heads up and getting the result there? Something to watch in the women's match. Then for the a little closer to the lower mainland, Altitude hosts River. Love the atmosphere, love the vibe up there. So that would be great on the men's and women's sides. Kind of, you know, slowish starts, bunch of draws. On the women's side for both sides, they'll want to pick things up and get after it. Me, Harborside will host the Whitecaps. So the Whitecaps women, they'll head out on the road and look to continue their hot start against Harborside. Meanwhile, of course, Harborside men's versus Whitecaps men's, that should be a very solid matchup. That Harborside side is always very, you know, very, very solid and very competitive. They're you know, the games on the men's side are always close. They can score, but they can also be a bit stingier. At Samson week one, he saw a bit more of the scoring and opening are the more open games, but I've also seen them grind out some tidier results. So very curious to see how that goes. So good slate ahead as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to some of those matchups and just, you know, yeah, as we move further into the League One BC season, see more of these teams face off against one another. Just get more of a sense of, you know, where the pecking order is going to be this season, how these teams are going to stack up, and, you know, kind of develop a picture for how the table is going to look come the end of the season and who's battling for those, you know, those playoff spots and those also valuable spots in the Canadian Championship on the men's side. So, yeah, another great week of League One BC action ahead, Alex. All right, is that pretty much it? Any final thoughts here? We dived into MLS. We talked a little bit of Canadian Premier League, League One BC. Look back at what happened the previous week and what's upcoming this weekend. Once again, I'm just looking forward to it. It feels like there's an opportunity every weekend to get out and experience some high quality local footy here in the Lower Mainland. So truly blessed at the moment.
Yeah, you really got to pick your choice this week. You can head out to the island, can head out to Vancouver, or Langley to go check Vancouver either Saturday, Sunday. And then, of course, League One, if you're on the island, you got Harborside. You know, if you're up in Nanaimo, don't want to head down to Langford for Pacific. You've also got Altitude for those in North Van. And, of course, you got out in Aldergrove with Unity. This week, I will be heading to Vancouver, Ottawa. We'll see. Maybe I'll surprise myself and head out to something Saturday. As it stands, I might take a rare rest day off and recoup, but who knows, you know, sometimes I just wake up and I'm ready to get in the saddle and go at it. So who knows, if you catch me at altitude, don't be surprised if that ends up happening, as I do have that in my locker to just, sometimes you wake up, you want to get after it. But I guess on that note, thanks for all of everyone who got up for this one and had at it and listened to episode 204 of the Third Sub podcast. Always a pleasure to come and chat, of course, with Sam as always, but also a pleasure to have you guys join us. That's what makes this so special, to have that great listenership and support on each episode. So again, can't say it enough. We'll say it every episode. You might get tired of it, but can't appreciate that enough. And we're looking forward to episode 205 as this busy, busy, busy BC calendar rolls on. Until then, you can find me on Twitter and on Blue Sky at Alexander or Alex Gongeruzic, and on Instagram Threads at AGR on the case. And until then, I will be trying my best not to melt here in my apartment as we get used to the weather heating up, but can't complain because it means summer football is here and that's the best season of all. So happy summer football, everyone.
Yeah, get outside, but you know, put some sunscreen on or stay in the shade, you know, be sun aware, because it's going to heat up this weekend, especially if you're out there, you know, on the football pitch or sitting in the bleachers, anything like that. All right, well, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. You know, we've been sprinkling in a little bit of League One BC, a little bit of Canadian Premier League content, as well as all the Vancouver Whitecaps content you come to expect. So, you know, pre-match, post-match, guest starting 11, report cards, everything in between, we're there for you. And yeah, hope you've been enjoying the expanded coverage as well. And looking forward to doing more of that throughout the summer. So as Alex said, you know, leave us a question, like, review, subscribe, whatever, all of that good stuff. We appreciate the interaction, and it's yeah, it just helps us make the podcast as good as possible. So thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.